On today's show, do the Cavs have the best young core in the NBA now because they have Donovan Mitchell? That and more on today's episode of Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astro Radio. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Uprocks and Estimation for the Sword. I want to thank you for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Evan is off today, so we have a special guest, ESPN 850's Danny Cunningham. Danny, I'm going to pose a question that you kind of brought up when we booked you coming on the show today. Where are the Cavs now in terms of their young core, amid Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley? I think they're very high. I think they're up there with Boston, up there with Memphis, New Orleans. We can debate the merits of all these teams. But where do you have the Cavs as you consider what kind of young core they now have?
They're up there, Chris. And it's an interesting discussion to be had because, you know, you bring up Boston, who, you know, Jason Tatum's still a young guy. Jaylen Brown's still a young guy. I think there's questions about whether Brown will be there for the long haul with that relationship, as his name has been thrown in, it seems like, every possible trade rumor it could be. And then, you know, they've got a guy like Robert Williams III. If you want to still consider Marcus Smart part of a young core, you can, I suppose. But that's a really deep team. Chris, they're so high up there. I think that you have to look at Memphis and how they compare with the Grizzlies, because Memphis is John Morant, who, outside of Evan Mobley, probably has the highest ceiling of anyone that we'll talk about. I think Evans might be a little bit higher just because of what he can do defensively. And I worry about the durability of a guy like Morant with being as explosive as he is at his size, right? Like, you think of a guy like Derrick Rose. I think New Orleans is a really interesting comp. And it's very health dependent on Zion as well down there. But I think that it's a very interesting comp there. But the Cavs are right near the top of this list, man. I think that they're for sure in the top five of the NBA. And I would venture to guess that they're probably closer to one than they are five.
Mobley is the crux of this discussion to me, because I think you can look at Garland and Mitchell and Allen to varying degrees and sort of say, okay, I kind of understand what they are. Mobley is a guy that I would, if I had to bet money on it, who's the best player in this Cavs team in 2 years, it's probably Evan Mobley. That's where my money would be.
I think for them to reach their ceiling as a group, it has to be. Right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can win a title with Donovan Mitchell as your best player. But I do think that this was a move that the Cavs made to win a title. But I think you can win one with him as your second best player, and him being your second best player would mean Evan Mobley took the leap that the franchise expects him to take over the next couple of years.
I think if we're going to rank them right now, I think definitely Boston is a, just because of what they've accomplished. Boston made the Tatum and Brown and Robert Williams and the guys they have made the NBA finals. They have done something that the Cavs just not have done. They have not done. Like, and the Cavs are just one season in. I think I would say Memphis is probably just a little bit ahead as well, based on what Ja and Jaren Jackson have accomplished, but I think it's close. New Orleans is the real wild card to me in this, Danny, just because, like, if Zion Williamson becomes the Zion Williamson we've seen the glimpses of, that is a guy that changes the trajectory of the whole team. Brandon Ingram's great. Herb Jones is fantastic. Like, they have a lot of really good young guys there as well. I think if I'm really getting down to where the Cavs fit into this, though, I think it is just that they have so much more to explore.
Sure.
And that's about Evan Mobley. Mobley has, I think, all-time upside. Like, we kind of know what Allen is. I think we kind of know what Mitchell is, too. We'll see kind of what a new scenery, a new demands of him, kind of what that brings out of him. I think Garland's going to be a guy. I know you are very, very high in him. You think he's going to – you had said on the show at the end of last season he's going to be all NBA next year. I think this is a guy, at the very least, is going to make multiple All-Star teams. He's in that Zion Ja draft class. He's the third guy in that draft class, ahead of RJ Barrett, ahead of other guys in that class. And I don't think it's close at this point.
I would agree.
Mobley just has all-time upside? Like that? I think to some people that sounds blasphemous, but it's like he is already to me a all-defense level player who like has the if you mold his offensive game correctly, he's gonna be a really good offensive player as well. Like I don't know what the ceiling is for Evan Mobley. Perhaps it is the roof.
I guess the best way that I can describe my hopes for Evan Mobley is, you know, you and I were both at the NBA 75 ceremony at the All-Star Game in Cleveland this past February. And when the All-Star Game returns to Cleveland 25 years from now, and they do, or 24 years from now at this point, and they do the top 100, like I expect Evan Mobley to be in attendance because he's going to be one of the 100 best players of all time. Like that's the kind of ceiling he has. And maybe Donovan Mitchell is that kind of guy also. I think that Mobley has a higher ceiling, but like I could see a world where Mitchell gets that type of honor because he had such a great career. And he's got off to a great start. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that for this team to reach its potential, it is just how high can Evan Mobley take you? And then you've got one of the best supporting casts in basketball around that true superstar, right? Because you look at Donovan Mitchell and he turns 26 today as you're listening to this. He's already made 3 All-Star games. I would suspect he makes more. Darius Garland's made an All-Star game. He's, 22, 23 years old. Jarrett Allen's 24. He's made an All-Star game. Maybe Allen only makes one, and that's fine. But, he's still an All-Star caliber player. But there aren't many other teams out there that can say, you know what? There are 4 guys on that roster that all could make an All-Star team this year. There's just not, especially with guys that are 26 or under, there's not another situation like that exists.
I think that is where this gets interesting. And I think one of the appeals of the Mitchell trade broadly is the theoretical runway you have here. Obviously, like nothing is ever going to go linearly and go perfectly how you map it out. That's just not how sports work. That is not how life works. But if you're the Cavs and you're saying our bet is that Evan Mobley is going into year 2, Donovan Mitchell is the oldest guy in this group, and he's just turning 26. We have him under contract for 2 more years. We believe that if we can win basketball games, we can keep this group together for a long time. And, you know, his history would suggest that ownership here is willing to throw down the money and pay the tax bill and all of that as it comes up and pay the money it's going to cost. And it's going to be a lot of money if you want to make this a long-term kind of sustainable thing. There is just so much upside in some of this and more. It feels, Danny, to me like there is more, as of right now, as it's just getting started, then maybe it is just because it's getting started, there is more insulation for the Cavs. And like maybe the Mitchell thing doesn't work out perfectly. Maybe, you have to flip him or whatever. Maybe that goes badly. Maybe just things break a certain way in another way. Or Mobley, maybe his offense stagnates in some way and he doesn't become as good as we expect. There is just so much built in here that like the talent, the baseline talent level for what is going on here. I think this will be a fun question to revisit when we're thinking about where the Cavs, the Celtics, the Grizzlies, throw the Wolves in there, throw the Pelicans in there, sure, where these teams are a year, 2, 3 years from now, because these are going to be the teams, maybe I think more so based on what we know about them than like Orlando or Houston, these other teams with really young, interesting players. These are the teams that are kind of have, as of now, separated themselves, and let's see where they go in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and it'll be cool to see how this plays out. One of the things, you talked about kind of the insulation and I guess the margin for error that the Cavs have. Think about how many things would have to go wrong for this Cavs team to, I don't want to say not reach its ceiling, because to reach its ceiling, one thing goes wrong and you don't reach your ceiling. But to finish closer to its floor, so many different things have to go wrong. And I think that's something that does make this really exciting for Cavs fans, is that this team's not only built up to, set up to be good, but there are so many different variables that do make them good. And yeah, if everything clicks, this is a team that can win not just a championship, but I do think multiple championships if everything goes perfectly, which is really hard and I wouldn't necessarily expect. But so many things would have to go wrong for this to not be a success, I think, is kind of the best way that I can put it.
I think that is dead on. All right, after the break, we are going to move on to a new topic. That's going to be reasonable expectations, not for the future Cavs, not for down the line, but the 2022-2023 Cavs with Andy Cunningham from ESPN 50. First, got to tell everyone about Built Bars. Built Bars, look, if you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you're depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. It's up there with like Top Gun Maverick and golf and all these other great things. Cookie dough chunk puffs.
Are you just naming my favorite things?
Yes, Danny, because you're here and I love you. Let me introduce you to, by the way, your new favorite puff. It's a cookie dough chunk puff. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. They're all the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of making it, plus it's healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein. Go to Built.com and snag a box for you and the family. Like all Built bars, the new cookie dough chunk puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. They're also made, like all Built products are, with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON15 and get 15% off your order. Again, that promo code is LOCKEDON15. All right, back here, Danny Cunningham, ESPN from ESPN 850 is my guest today. Evan is off. Producer Jake Stevens is not with us behind the virtual glass. All right, Danny, I think if I'm the Cavs and I'm looking at this, I'm going to view this conversation in two segments. This first half of it is this. I think avoiding the play-in has to be the goal.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And it becomes interesting because when the Cavs made this trade last week, I thought, okay, this is a team that, you know, they should be a top four seed, no doubt. You know, they should win a playoff series. And then you start looking at who else is in the East, because I guess a lot of Cavs fans are conditioned that when the Cavs are good at the top of the East, the rest of the East just isn't very good, because from 2014 to 2018, that's how it was, right? Like, those LeBron teams are probably greater than anything else we'll ever see here, just in the sheer talent of those teams. But also the rest of the Eastern Conference, just there was no real challenger. Now you've got Milwaukee with Giannis, who's probably the best player in the world, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday. I don't think they'll last quite as long as the Cavs will, but they're better than the Cavs right now, no doubt. You've got Philadelphia, who I don't per se believe in as a playoff team, but they're going to win a lot of regular season games. Boston Celtics just went to the finals. The Brooklyn Nets are great on paper. Who knows what could happen, but you can't count them out, right? Like the Brooklyn on papers is basically
to take something Zach Lowe said on a recent low post, I am personally done talking about the Brooklyn Nets as a real thing until they play actual basketball for a sustained period of time.
I agree, but I also can't say they're not going to be in the playoffs.
Yes.
Right.
No. 100%.
Like, I can't say 100%. That either.
Like, yeah. It's
do
true.
I don't buy them as a title contender. I'm not rushing to the window to put a futures bet on the Nets winning a title. But yeah. I'm also saying, okay, there's a relatively realistic world where that's top three or a top four seed. Maybe. I don't know. So you've got those four. Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You still have who am
Toronto.
I missing?
So you have Toronto.
I think the Cavs are in Miami was the one seed last year.
Yeah.
And while I think that the Cavs may have passed them in talent, Miami's still been there, done that. Like, they won 53 games last year, were the one seed. They're still going to be good. Toronto's in that same tier. So there's six already. Atlanta just traded for DeJounte Murray. That's seven. There's seven legitimate good teams in the Eastern Conference. Just by law, one of them has to be in the play-in tournament. We've not even talked about, like, Chicago could have a good season, although I don't believe in them per se. Maybe the Knicks with RJ Barrett.
Nah. I think.
But and then also, like, there's going to be a team that pops up and has a season like the Cavs had last year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Detroit with Cade Cunningham. Like, that could be a thing.
What I suspect is that I think there are two. I feel, as we're saying, ranking them today, I think there's a contender tier of the East that I firmly am just kind of in on, and that's Milwaukee and that is Boston. Philly, after thinking about this and maybe being a little too reactionary to start, I think just because of how good Joel Embiid is and, like, what we've seen from Harden and all of that and, like, some of the moves they made in the summer, Philly is probably, like, my tentative, like, written in, like, a pencil kind of three, just in terms of, like, the upside of how good that team could be. Miami obviously has, like, done a lot, and that takes you to four. But I kind of think, like, everything, at least regular season-wise, beyond two is just, like, and maybe, like, Milwaukee doesn't have a foot on the gas and, like, seeding gets a little weird. That's, like, entirely possible, right?
Sure. But you can pencil them in as avoiding the play-in.
Yes.
You're not going to finish seventh.
No, barring, like, severe injuries or anything like that. What I think is likely to happen is that there is just going to be a bloodbath to, like, for these seats. And it, there are teams I feel better about. Like the Lonzo Ball thing with the Bulls, if I'm looking at them.
Weird, man.
That's terrifying. Are you going to – can you repeat the Rosens last year? What are you getting out of Vooch? All that. There are some concerns. The Cavs, I think, have some concerns, which will be the focus of our segment three. I don't think top four in the East and like 50 wins feels out of the realm for me, though.
No, it doesn't, and you need things to break your way, but as we know with last year, like the Cavs were a team that was pacing for 50 wins, and I don't think that they were ever actually going to get there, but then everyone got hurt at different times, and it cost them several games. They have a little bit more margin for that now, presuming that one of their four best players doesn't miss the whole season like happened last year with Colin Sexton, where, you know, you can – we can have a debate about what his future in Cleveland would have been or whatever, but there's no question he was one of the four best players last year, four most important players last year.
Yeah.
So when you lose him for 71 games, it cuts down on your margin for error.
And the Rubio ACL injury, everyone had COVID time. Like the Cavs had Love and Markin and missed some COVID time. Jared Allen gets hurt at the end of the year. Evan Mobley gets hurt at the end of the year. Like, I think aside from the fact that Donovan Mitchell is like a top 20-ish player in the NBA, and I think like on offense, probably like a borderline top 10 offensive player. Sure. One of the biggest benefits that I think he provides you is that like you can now navigate the regular season and chase wins without like having to like ask the world of Darius Garland or ask the world of Evan Mobley. You can like manage this in a real way. And that this leads me to the other part of this discussion, Danny. I think the offense with Mitchell, I think they were below average by a slight little bit last year based on offensive rating. If you have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland as your offensive engines and Evan Mobley's near two, and like you roughly have enough stuff and Jared Allen is just going to be an efficiency monster at the center position. Mm-hmm. You got to get above league average with your offense. There's not really like an excuse. Like even if the offense is kind of rigid, even if there's like, it's not the flashiest thing, they have too much offensive talent and too much just kind of working that. Like I'm not saying they're going to necessarily be top 10.
See, I think that's kind of my expectation. Like
top, so you're saying I'm saying I think they could be top 10 on both sides of the ball.
That's kind of my expectation because I've like kind of pushed back on the notion, oh, this is a team that should walk through a playoff series. Like they should no doubt make it to the conference semifinals. And I look at that and say, you know, the East is just too good for me to think that way, that they'll be a top four seed. But when you look at having Mitchell and Garland together in the backcourt, you mentioned the efficiency monster Jarrett Allen is, and the presumed stepped forward that Evan Mobley should make on that end of the floor, think, okay, that should be a top 10 unit. Like there's no excuse for them to not be, let's just say, eighth in the NBA in offensive rating. And then you look at Jarrett Allen defensively. Evan Mobley is already an all-defense caliber guy. Like he got all-defense votes as a rookie. That just does not happen.
Him and Herb doing that in the same year is crazy.
Because it's such a rare thing.
Yeah.
It's so like the biggest adjustments guys have to make going into the league is not ball handling or shooting or anything like that. It's learning how to play defense in the NBA is a really freaking hard thing to do. And Evan Mobley is already elite at it. So you look at that and say, okay, the wing is shaky and the backcourt won't be great, but they've got two of the five best rim defenders maybe in the NBA. They should be a top 10 defense. And then you start to talk to yourself, okay, well, if they're top 10 on both ends, they're going to win like 55 games.
They also they are, I think, more than some of these other teams, I think, in a position to like really juice the regular season.
Sure.
Miami is going to, like, you would think, just based on Kyle Lowry's age and Jimmy Butler's like relative age and like just their sort of Miami-ness, they can kind of ease through this a little bit. Maybe
Heat culture, baby.
Yeah, Heat culture.
They'll tell you about it.
Look, they turned my guy Deion into a absolute killer for a little bit there and got him paid. So you know what, Heat culture, good on you in my book. like does Milwaukee have the same incentive to really push for regular season wins? You would just Boston coming off of a title run and all of that can take out of you, right? Like the Cavs, I think, are a team more so than some of the other ones that just have the juice, the legs, like the depth. We'll see kind of how that ultimately shakes up, but like they have, I think, the wherewithal to kind of go for some of this and kind of push for this. And I'm curious to see like what the kind of the wrap this up. One of the things that I feel most intrigued by, Danny, is what is the, you're going to be a little different defensively because of Mitchell's not a good defensive player. The Jazz, yeah. The last four years with him, had the 14th best offense, the 11th best offense, the third best offense, and the best offense in the regular season last year. Defensively, they've been very good as well. First and then 13th, first and then 9th, but that's because of Rudy Gobert.
Yes.
In large part. So considering J.B. Bickerstaff is not the offensive coach that Quinn Snyder is, tilts more defense, they have different defensive personnel. Maybe you're getting Mitchell to buy in more in a new situation. I think that's going to be asked of him. I don't suspect it would, considering what we know about JB. And I think that's a positive. I am sort of curious to see, like, what is the Cavs, you know, really good defense last year. Are they willing to sacrifice a little bit on that end to juice the offense? What is, like, their comfort in trying to balance these two things?
It's interesting. My pushback on the offensive end would be, well, yeah, Ricky Rubio was nice, and Mike Conley Jr. is a nice player. Neither one of those at this point in their career, or at the point in their career they're playing alongside Donovan Mitchell, are nope. Darius Garland. Nope. So I do think that'll help juice the offense just naturally. Like, JB doesn't have to be the offensive wizard that Quinn Snyder was as the head coach.
And the Cavs don't have, like, the perimeter shooting that, like, the Jazz
correct.
Did. Like, they don't have Joe Ingles, Bogdanovich. Like, they don't have those kind of guys.
But I do think that they're better situated in the backcourt with Mitchell and Garland than the Jazz mm-hmm. ever were. And I mean, this is all going to hinge on Evan Mobley, because Jarrett Allen's not Rudy Gobert, but is he, like, I don't know, 85% of who Rudy Gobert is? Maybe. Like, that's fine. And he's super efficient offensively. I think that they're kind of the same player offensively. So I just think that I would expect actually a little bit more, maybe not peak Jazz offense, but a little bit more of middle of the tier Jazz offense. So I think that finishing, like, 7th or 8th offensively is a very realistic expectation for this Cavs team.
The only thing about Gobert and Allen that I find funny, in I know he can do, we just don't see it. Like, Allen actually had more of, like, a post up game than Rudy Gobert last year. That's yeah. just, like, a thing that happened, and, like, it is what it
I
is.
I mean, like, Rudy Gobert would be guarded by Patrick Beverley, and the Jazz can't do anything with it.
Yeah. I think last year would lead you to believe that that would not necessarily be the case with Allen in a high leverage situation. And then, like, but then you, what kind of shooting are you on a LeVert and Okoro? We're like, do they make some kind of moves? Okay, this leads us into segment 3. And after this break, we're gonna hit on team concerns, starting with, are the Cavs gonna get average wing play this year? Stay tuned. All right, last segment with Danny Cunningham from ESPN Cleveland. Danielle, I look at the Cavs wings, which is Jetty Osman, Dylan Windler, Isaac Okoro, Caris LeVert, you know, Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens. They have 6 guys, with LeVert and Okoro, I think, kind of being at the top of that peck order right now. I'm curious to see how they sort of manage these minutes at the 3. You know, the numbers from last year would suggest that you could put Dean Wade in some of those 3 minutes. I don't know if you're going to – I don't think it'd be wise to really try to replicate the Markkanen thing. We'll talk about Markkanen in this segment as well. It's just what you're getting out of losing him. I kind of am curious to see, like, how the wing stuff shakes out, because that is very clearly, to me, the weakest point on the roster. And that's probably going to be the case throughout this era. But it's yeah. about, like, how can they develop it? How can they define guys' roles? What are their plans to kind of get shooting and defense and a little bit of, you know, attack and closeouts and things from their wings?
I mean, I think that's kind of what has to terrify you about this team if you're a fan, because this is more than ever the era of the 6'8 creator, right? Offensively, the guy that can shoot, create, play defense, 6'8 with a 7-foot wingspan. And the Cavs are very notably missing that from the roster. Like, they've got a smaller backcourt that's awesome. They've got an awesome front court, but they've got no one on the wing. I think it'll be interesting, the starting lineup. And I know that you guys had this discussion earlier on the pod about who to kind of start in this starting 5, where you can pencil in Allen, Mobley, Garland, and Mitchell at the other 4 spots. And I do think that it'll be interesting to see, and we've mentioned that JB Bickerstaff's a coach that kind of leans defensively. So I would think that Isaac Okoro has to be more in the plans, but so much of what they're going to be able to do offensively hinges on him just being able to shoot, like, I don't know, 34.5% from 3. Like, if he can do that, the outlook looks so much better on that end of the floor.
and just like be comfortable, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
And
like don't be scared to shoot. Like, because he's going to get, and he got them last year.
Yes.
He got wide open shots last year. I mean, if you thought he got open shots last year, wait until you watch the Cavs this year, because there's going to be no one even close to his airspace. So I think that's a big thing to watch. Is he comfortable just letting it fly? Because he's going to have to.
All right, next thing. This is maybe me just overthinking, and this because this is what I do. And I'm going to read a full statement, and then I'm going to let Danny kind of respond to it. So I'm asking the question, will they miss Lauri Markkanen more than we think? You do not do a trade because of Lauri Markkanen. Like, you don't, like, not do this trade because you have to give a Lauri Markkanen. But A, I think they liked him as a pick-and-pop option, particularly late. He was really useful as a spacer, and he battled threes on the defense. I think there are ways I think they can replace his skill set, particularly if they get funky, particularly if Kevin Love, who we'll talk about, gets kind of has another really strong year. I think there's also probably an offensive evolution to come, as we've kind of hit on, in terms of what the team is going to do. I just look at what they gave up, considering like what Mitchell does versus what Sexton does and everything, and what Abaji theoretically could have provided. Markkanen feels like the real rotational loss amid what they did last year, and sort of what the function of this roster still kind of needs in some ways to me.
Well, he's the only one, right? Because Sexton played in 11 games last year. So for all intents and purposes, he kind of wasn't on the team.
Also, Mitchell's better. Mitchell's just better at everything Colin Sexton does.
No, but just like from what you're losing last year, like you can't even count Colin Sexton. Like he played in those 11 games and then he was gone. Ochai Agbaji's never stepped foot on the NBA floor for regular season games. So we have no idea what he is. So realistically, what the Cavs roster has undergone, I mean, they added some things on the margins with guys like Robin Lopez and Real Neto, but they subbed out Lauri Markkanen and they brought in Donovan Mitchell. Like, that is a huge upgrade. Will they miss him at times? Maybe. But I find it hard to believe that I'm ever going to either be at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse after a game or watching an away game on TV and say to you, if we're in person at the game, or to my girlfriend Brittany, you know, they really win this game if Lauri Markkanen's still on the roster. I just don't think that's ever going to be the case. And if that's not going to be the case, I can't be overly concerned about it.
I think that is right. I think I'm curious to see, like, one of their staples late in games was, let's run a pick and pop with Markkanen. I want to just see what their, like, counters for things are now when they need a quick puck. And Mitchell obviously kind of does it on his own. And
well,
also,
that,
like,
that's the thing.
Also,
they
like,
had to
I
do that?
I want to see because a, they. I want to see a Garland Mitchell pick and roll, pick and pop.
Yeah.
I want
to
see it.
Well, like, they kind of had to do that, Chris, because they had one guy to handle the basketball down the stretch. Like, they had one guy in Darius Garland they could trust to get the inbound after the other team scored and bring it up and initiate offense. They had one option to do that. Now you've got another one, and having the other one, I think, will really alleviate so many of the things that went wrong down the stretch of that season. So, I mean, yeah, the Markkanen pick and pop was something that they would go to, and that's all fine and well. But who would you rather give the ball to in a big spot, Lauri Markkanen or Donovan Mitchell?
It's not a question. It's Donovan Mitchell. I think where this leads me to think is, what is the Caris LeVert plus picks trade in theory that gets you a 6'8 version of what Lauri Markkanen provided you at a, that you can bring in and swap out the LeVert or Osman contracts for MLE next summer? That's kind of where this leads me to think you go find a replacement for what this was in a more wingy kind of frame. Okay, last thing. This is maybe the one that I think is hardest for us to guess at, because it's just like, we'll see how this kind of shakes out. But I think it's worth asking, do the veteran depth pieces, I would say Love and Rubio most notably, do they hold up slash play close to the level they did last year? And if they don't, or if there's like some injury absence, do the young stars just erase that concern for you? Are they so good right now that you can just like make do? I think in time, Danny, the way you're building this roster with Garland on his contract, with the contract Moby's going to get, even Allen at a relative, like, I think a pretty fair and affordable number of $20 million, what Mitchell's next contract might look like, you're going to get to a team building point where your superstar players are going to have to cover for some of the things your other guys can't do. And that's the point of having the best players in the world. You'll take that 10 times out of 10. But for this year, I think the veteran pieces still hold the particular value to help this team kind of grow up. So Rubio is a big question mark. We'll just see what the ACL looks like. Kevin Love, we'll see if he can just repeat it. But I think I'm wondering, how do these veteran pieces look if you're kind of depending on them still a little bit still?
I mean, you are going to depend on them, but you're depending on them to play roles, right? Like, you're not depending on any of these veteran pieces to unless catastrophic injuries hit, and they did last year. JB Bickerstaff's never going to have a conversation with Kevin Love and say, hey, Kev, we need you to carry us for like this next week. Like, that's just not going to happen anymore. I think that all these veteran players are now kind of role players, and I think that they fit really well. Like, I'm excited to see what Kevin Love can do. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of a drop off as he's another year older, but he was awesome last year. He totally kind of rebirthed his career, and it was so awesome to see. And Caris LeVert, if you want to consider him that veteran player, I think that he'll be better this year in a Cavs uniform. Hopefully that he can get lucky injury-wise, because I can't think of someone in the NBA that's really had a worse couple of years than him. I'm just the medical front, dealing with, you know, the foot injury last year and dislocating his ankle a few years back. And, oh, by the way, cancer in between all of that. So you have to hope that he can just give you, I don't know, 65 games of average production and you're happy. So I don't think that I'm concerned about the veterans, because I don't think any of them are going to be tasked with carrying the burden unless something really catastrophic happens. And if something catastrophic happens, kind of what's the point, right?
Yeah, the Love thing I think is the one that I think, as I've thought about this, I think what he did last year, like the case for him winning Sixth Man of the Year was that what he did was so vital to them just like functioning on offense sometimes. And I think part of the point of Donovan Mitchell is that like now Kevin Love does not necessarily have to be that guy for every minute he's on the floor. Like you have this wiggle room now, because Kevin Love can just like space and vibe and be Kevin Love.
But on the nights that he is that guy, think about how awesome this team's going to look. And the nights that he's not that guy, okay, that's fine. This team can still win.
Yeah. Danielle, we'll end on this. I want to ask you just a gut check question right here. I think we'll see a lot this year of pairings of guys. So, like, is it Garland and Mobley? Is it Mitchell and who? Like, of those big four, do you like particular fits of one player with another as you're trying to kind of maybe stagger their minutes over the course of 48?
I do think that because of his experience with Rudy Gobert, I think it makes sense to have Mitchell and Jarrett Allen out there a lot together. And I've got a kind of and of course that would lead to Evan Mobley and Darius Garland being the other pair. I am very curious who's on the floor with Ricky Rubio when he comes back.
I
think that'll be an interesting thing to watch for, because I think it could, there's not a wrong answer there, but I'm interested to see which way JB goes as far as pairing him with which particular big man. And I think that it might make more sense in a way to pair Caris LeVert in a bench role, which I think makes the most sense with Evan Mobley, provided that Mobley's shot is improved the way that we think it is.
If I had to guess today what makes logical sense, and I was wrong about this last year because I thought Rubio plus Sexton made a ton of sense, and they went Rubio Garland, and that ended up working out perfectly, hit a gangbusters, all that. I would think Garland plus LeVert plus Mobley as a trio, and then Mitchell, healthy Ricky Rubio, Allen.
Well, and I do think it makes so much sense there, because Rubio and Mitchell both have experience with Rudy Gobert. And if Jarrett Allen's, you know, 85% of Rudy Gobert, I think that they can lean on things that they did together in Utah and recreate that in a sense. And I think that'll be very good stuff for the Cavs. I also think I think it makes sense to bring Caris LeVert off the bench too in these scenarios.
Yes.
At the very least until Ricky Rubio's back. Because I think that LeVert in that second unit until Rubio is ready makes more sense than anything else. I just think you lack a scoring punch until he's back. So I do think that Okoro in the starting lineup, and then if you want to have that trio with LeVert in it, I think that's later on in the game.
We talked about this. We did a podcast about it. I think we'll do it again. And I think I kind of want to have you on to have that discussion now. I do not quite understand if the three in this new era is supposed to like link and fill gaps in between what your big four guys are doing. I don't quite understand what Caris LeVert's function is in that.
So I don't think he fits in the starting rotation.
But if one of the guards comes off, then he slides in and like,
Especially while Rubio is not there. Maybe you see how things are going come early January when Ricky Rubio's back. But I do think that there are nights where Caris LeVert will finish the game on the floor with the starting four. I could see nights where he's part of the closing lineup, but I don't think it makes sense to put him out there at jump ball.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, Danny Cunningham, Real D Cunningham on Twitter. Check him out on ESPN 850, hosting a ton of great stuff over there. They're doing a poll this week, I believe, for, if I read this tweet right, from Matt Fontana, new theme song coming on ECT?
That's a fight between he and I. He wants a new theme song. I think that he's so he tries to do it on September 1st every year. As we record this, it's September 6th. As you listen, it's September 7th. So I think that he's missed the deadline. I think that our current opening song, Icky Thump by the White Stripes, should remain in place for another year because he missed the deadline to submit a new one.
I think, Danny, your counter has to just be Top Gun theme song or nothing.
So I tried to make it Danger Zone. This was my thing. And he said that it would be Danger Zone if I could get Kenny Loggins on the show. And I reached out a few times and I talked to Kenny Loggins, his manager and stuff, but he's just like, I had to get him on the show in the month of August and he's booked until October. Like he can't do anything. So it's that I gave it a shot. I truly did. Like that's where my mind's at. But I also think that Icky Thump's a killer intro song. So yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to stay.
Yeah. Don't fix it if it's not broken. Just
that's my other counterpoint.
That's right. All right, we'll be back on Friday looking at the ways the Cavs could fill their last roster spot. I hope you tune in for that. If you want a great second listen today, check out the check out the Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022, an 8-episode extravaganza. Wow. To get you ready for the NFL season, the local team experts of the Locked On Podcast Network and Odyssey NFL Insiders all combined into one Ultimate NFL Preview. Search for the Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris. That's been Danny. Thanks again to producer Jake Stevens for making this one sound great. We'll be back soon. Be well.